it's good to be back with you. Last week, Chuck did a fantastic job. I listened to his sermon. Wow. Isn't it amazing what God does to us and through us and with us when we allow Him to? Cindy and I had a great time just being away. It was good just to get away and relax a little bit. And again, she got spoiled by the grandkids. I never get spoiled. But we had a great time, and it's really good and comforting to know that when I'm not here, that we have folks that are able to step in and take care of things. And I do really greatly appreciate Chuck and what he had to say last week. We're talking about heaven in the real world. And the idea behind this study is realizing that we don't have to wait to get to heaven in order to enjoy the power of heaven. It's being able to live in the power of heaven right now while we're living in this world. And so we started out this study in talking about what is heaven's message for us as His people. And that message is quite simply that God loves us, and He loved us enough that He gave the most powerful and the most valuable thing that He owned, His own Son, to redeem us or to buy us back from sin. And then we were talking after that about the whole idea of taking that message that heaven has for us and sharing it with other people. In this third and final part of our study, what we're looking at is embracing heaven's methods. In other words, how does heaven do things in our world? And embracing the way that heaven does things so that it allows us to live in the power of heaven. And so we talked about a couple of weeks ago, we were looking at maturing through pain and the fact that a lot of times life has a lot of pain, and how can we learn to grow through that pain that we experience in life. This morning we're going to talk about maturing through testing. Okay, maturing through testing. Now, this is a test. Okay, show of hands. How many of you recognize what this is? Wow. A lot of you are really young. For those of you who didn't put your hands up, this is what is referred to as a test pattern. Okay? Back when I was a kid, and when I was a young child, we didn't have color TV. You notice this is in black and white, okay? We didn't have color TV back then. And what would happen is the networks, and there were only three, by the way, three channels is all you got on TV back then, okay? And they would have a required government test that they would put on there to make sure the signal was what it was supposed to be and blah, 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 you see? And so this would come on your screen. This is a test, you see? And then you'd have to listen to this, you know, long beep noise, you know, that came on there. But that's a test. I can still remember when we got our first rotating antenna. All right, we had rabbit ears, okay? Some of y'all are going, what in the world? Yeah, these young kids are going, what, rabbit ears? Yeah, you know, and you had to adjust those to try to get the best signal that you could and so forth. And my dad got a rotating antenna. We mounted it on the house up there on a big pole, and it had a little box, and you could turn the knob to actually turn the antenna to get the best signal on any one of those still three channels that you had, see? And I still remember when we got our very first color TV set. That was really huge. We didn't even know anything about HD TV and all those kind of things, you see? So a lot of you young people, not only do you not know what this little thing is right here, this test signal here, but you don't have a clue what it was like to watch black and white TV, you see? What an experience. I'm glad we have the technology we do today, but you know what? There are a lot of tests that come to us in life, and they come in a lot of different ways, and that's what we want to talk about this morning. This is a test. James writes for us in James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, the text that was read for us as we began. Consider it pure joy, my brothers, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith does what? He says it develops
perseverance. Okay? And perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. So James is telling us here that we are going to face tests in our life. We're going to face a lot of tests, and we're going to face a lot of different tests. Notice that he says that we are facing trials of many kinds. Okay? So our life is going to be filled with tests and a lot of different kinds of tests. But we have to understand that the reason for those tests is because they develop and strengthen us in our perseverance. And that perseverance then helps us to grow into more mature Christians. Now, the testing of your faith, what James is really talking about here is, it's not a pass or fail kind of test. God is not interested in giving you a test. You say, okay, answer so many questions, and if you get 70% or more right, you pass. You know, if you don't, then you fail. This is not a pass or fail kind of test. You need to think of it more as a testing like that of proving or testing metal, you see? And the way that that is done is that the metal is put into a hot furnace and it's melted down. And the process of doing that is called smelting. And the process of doing that burns off the impurities out of the metal, you see? And if that metal could actually feel things, then just think about what it would be like being put into a hot furnace. You see? That's the idea of testing or proving, so to speak. You see? That testing that we go through, James says, develops perseverance. Okay? So our testing by God, then, is designed simply to make us stronger. God is always interested, and we've talked about this before, whatever God does in our lives, whether it's good or bad, it is always for our best interest. You see, God is always working on our behalf. Why does he do that? Because he loves us, quite simply. There's no real deep theological explanation for it. It's just simply because God loves us. Isn't that great? You see, we have a God who loves us so much that everything he does in our lives is for our best interest. Now, we sometimes look at the things that God is doing in our lives and we go, how is this in my best interest? You see? But be assured that whatever is going on, God knows that it is in our best interest. It is designed by him to make us stronger. Okay? So each successive test that we go through in our lives, you see, is really a preparation for the next one. Okay? Whether that test comes today or tomorrow or next week or whenever it comes in our life, the test that you may be going through today, right now, is to make you stronger, to help prepare you for the one that is coming ahead. And what that does is it makes the perseverance and the steadfastness grow within us. And ultimately, the reason that God does that comes back to something that Chuck talked about in his lesson last week. It keeps us from giving up. You see? Because giving up is absolutely the worst thing that we can do. You see? That we need to understand the importance of never giving up. No matter how hard the trial is, no matter what it is that we're facing, no matter what we're going through, never give up. You see? And that's why we go through those things, is to build us stronger. You see? So that we will not give up on our faith and upon our relationship with God. Because the alternative to that is our destruction. And so God is always building us up, and sometimes it's through those trials that we face. That's what develops the perseverance within our lives. And perseverance is that stick-to-itiveness, that whole idea of never quitting, never giving up, no matter what. Okay? Now, the problem is that oftentimes what we do is we look at what we're facing, the test that we're in the midst of, and we say, I don't deserve this. You see? In fact, that whole concept of I don't deserve this is really, Brother Don McLaughlin in his book says, that's the ultimate faith destroyer in the midst of testing. We look at whatever we're going through, we say, I don't deserve this. You say, I'm better than this. Or you know, it's the whole idea that I didn't do anything wrong to deserve this kind of behavior, right? We look at ourselves as being so righteous that we shouldn't have to put up with this kind of stuff. And one of the things that we fail to do is to realize that there is no one, Paul says, who is righteous, not even one. And I think that if we're really honest, we could all substitute the word one in there with me. There is no one righteous, not even me. So the whole idea of I don't deserve this, you see, all that does is serve to make us bitter, I think a lot of times, even toward God. See, if God really loved me, then he wouldn't be making this or allowing this to happen to me in my life. Okay? And when we're doing that, we fail to recognize and to understand that whatever we're going through, God is doing it to make us better. See? But this whole idea of I don't deserve this really gets in the way of us benefiting from whatever the trial or the tribulation is that we are facing in our life. Brother Don McLaughlin goes on to say this. He says, God knows better than you or me what we need packed into our spiritual, emotional, mental, and experiential bags for the journey ahead. We must resist the temptation to sidestep the testing in our paths, because our current tests will bring the maturity we will need to endure future testing. You see, the reality is we really don't know what's around the next curve in our life. Does anybody here possess a crystal ball? Anybody got one of those? If you got one, maybe you have a spare or whatever, let me borrow it. No, it doesn't exist, does it? The reality is we don't know what's going to happen in our lives tomorrow. James makes that perfectly clear to us, doesn't he? You don't even know what will happen tomorrow. Your life is a what? A vapor or a mist, you say. Tomorrow is uncertain. We can't see far enough around the next curve in our life to know what's going to happen. And so the trials that we're facing today are designed by God to prepare us for what's around the next corner, you say, or what's around the next curve. Because though we can't see around that curve, God can. God knows what's around the next curve in your life. And so again, we go back to the whole idea that God is always operating in our best interest, so that I know, okay, whatever I'm facing today, whatever trial, whatever hardship I'm facing today, God has given that to me not to punish me or not to make my life miserable, but to prepare me for what he knows I'm getting ready to face around the next curve, you say. And if I don't face that today, I won't be prepared and adequate enough to face what's coming down the road. And that requires us then to trust in God, you say. Perseverance and strength of character will enable us to bear much worse things. Okay? Why is that true? Because again, what I'm facing today is designed and intended to strengthen me for what I'm going to face tomorrow. Okay? So if I avoid those things that I'm facing, the trials and tribulations or the tests that I'm facing, if I try to get out of them or avoid them, which is what we typically tend to do, you see, then I am shortchanging myself and I will be ill-prepared for what's coming up. But you see, what we do oftentimes is we focus on the reason. What's the reason for me having to go through this issue or this struggle or this test or this trial? And, I mean, in that, you know, so often when you're facing stuff, don't you ask that question? Why is this happening? And we do that, right? Why me? Why am I having to go through this? And sometimes we even go to the extent we say, why me, Lord? You say, Lord, why are you doing this to me? You Okay? What is the purpose for this? We oftentimes get so concerned and focused on what the reason is behind it, you see, that we fail to miss the real issue, and that is our growth and our strengthening that God is providing to us. Maybe that's the only reason. Okay? But I can assure you that it's not to make your life miserable, and it's not just to punish you, you see? Because as we said earlier, God is always, always, always acting in our best interest. And by the way, He can't do otherwise. And why do we say that? Because His very nature is agape. God is love. And love always, always has the other person's best interest in mind. So therefore, if God really is love, and I believe He is, then He cannot do something that is not in our best interest. Okay? And so we find ourselves, though, looking for the reason. What's the purpose behind this? Say, and what we need to do is we have to recognize that when we are thinking in that kind of a way, we're thinking like the world thinks about these things. You see? And usually what happens as a result is, then when we're thinking like the world about our trials and testing and so forth, we want to get out of it. And so we'd like to have a card kind of like this, right? I just don't know what went wrong. I don't know why this is happening to me. But wouldn't you love to have some cards like this? And the key to this is, you see that get out of trouble free card. Wouldn't you like to have a stack of these? So that as you go through life and you face a trouble, all you have to do is just pass the card to the appropriate person, you see, and you walk away trouble free, end of the problem. You know, isn't life grand? That's how the world thinks. And that's how the world wants to deal with the trials and tribulations that it faces. But that's not God's way. You see, we have to understand that sometimes that testing, God gives it to us specifically, as we said, to make us stronger. So if we try to get away with it, we try to push it to the side so we don't have to deal with it, then what we're saying is, I don't want or I don't need to be stronger. You see? And that's kind of risky based on what we said a few moments ago. We don't know what's around the next curve. So if we're convinced we don't need to be any stronger, we got it all together, we can handle life, and we won't be prepared for whatever that next test is. But this is how the world deals with things. You know, we don't like it, just let me get out of this trouble. Let me bypass that. Let me suggest to you that there is, at least in my opinion, there is no more difficult test that anyone has ever faced than the one that Abraham faced when God told him to sacrifice his son. I don't know about you, but you know what? If God were to come to me and say, Russ, I want your son, how would you respond to that? I don't know, but, you know, that's a toughie. I can't think of anything that would be more difficult. You want me to do what? Give up my son? You, no. But that's the test that God gave to Abraham. Take your son, your only son, to the mountain that I will show you and sacrifice him there to me. The writer of Hebrews, in Hebrews 11, verses 17 through 19, gives us some insight into Abraham's thinking when God gave him this test. Okay? So let's take a look at what the writer here tells us about Abraham's thought process through all of this. Okay? He says, by faith, when God tested him. Okay? So we know that Abraham understood and recognized this was a test that God was giving him. Okay? When God tested him, he offered Isaac as a sacrifice. Okay? He who had received the promises was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. So here's the thing. Abraham's thought process is he's trying to figure out this test that God has placed before him. Notice what he's doing. His whole thought process was about two things: God's promise and God's provision. Abraham knew that God had promised him, and Abraham believed that God would fulfill his promise. God's promise and his provision. Let's take another look at this verse. By faith, okay? By faith, Abraham, who, when God tested him, offered Isaac as a sacrifice, okay? He who had received the promises, okay? He had received the promises. There it is. Abraham is focusing on God's promise to him. Okay? He was about to sacrifice his one and only son, even though God had said to him, "It is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned." There's the promise right there. So Abraham, as he's going on this mission, this test that God has given to him, he's reasoning and he's thinking, wait a minute here. How is this going to work out? I don't know. But God promised me that he was going to bless me through Isaac. And then look at what the writer of Hebrews says last part. He said, Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. That's Abraham focusing on God's provision. I don't know how God is going to work this out, but Abraham reasoned in his mind that God at least could raise the dead. But he knew that God was going to fulfill his promise. You see? God made a promise, and God always keeps his promise, and so I have no reason to believe he won't keep this one. And so somehow, God is going to work this out. And so Abraham took his son, his only son Isaac, up to the mountain. And it's really interesting as you read the narrative there, that when Abraham arrived there to the foot of the mountain with his servants and the donkeys, he told the servants to stay there with the animals. And he said, "Me and the boy will go and worship God, and we will come back." Wow. Wow, what an awful, awesome, powerful statement of faith that Abraham, knowing what God has called him to do, we are going up to this mountain, and I'm going to kill my son. But he said to them before he left, "We will come back." How's that going to happen? Abraham didn't know. But he had all the faith in God's promise that they both would come back. So as they walked up that mountain, the son Isaac said to him, "Father, we have the fire and we have the wood, but where is the lamb for the sacrifice?" And Abraham said, "God will provide." See, that's God's provision, who always fulfills his promise. Promise and the provision that allowed Abraham to obey God in this time of testing. Okay. They went up on the mountain, and Abraham reasoned that God could raise the dead. You see, how we reason is the real key to things. If we reason by the worldly standards, by worldly wisdom, then really the only hope that we have is helplessness. We get overwhelmed by the testing that we're following. You know, again, how is this going to work out in my benefit? How is this going to work out in any good way? We don't see the end of it, so we feel helpless and hopeless. But when we reason by faith, then we persevere. So what I want you to think about is this whole idea. Instead of focusing on what's the reason for this happening to me, focus on reasoning, you say, reasoning that is based on God's promise and God's provision, just like Abraham did. And that will help you through whatever trial that you are facing, whatever the test that is laid before you, God's promise and God's provision. Okay? By the way, I don't know if you know this or not, and I don't think it was any kind of a coincidence. It was God's plan. The mountain that God took Abraham to offer his one and only son, Isaac, on was the same place that God offered His Son, His one and only Son, for us. The same place where two did not withhold their only Son. It's called in the Bible, in the New Testament, Mount Calvary. Okay? The same place that Isaac was put on the altar by Abraham. Let's talk about the fear factor. When we're in the midst of trials and testing and so forth in our lives, fear becomes a major factor oftentimes, doesn't it? Because we're looking at whatever the situation is, and we don't see how this is going to work out, at least not in our good favor, right? And so we become fearful. What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to us? How is this going to work out? And we want all those answers. We're trying to reason again, why me, and so forth and so forth. And so fear becomes a major aspect of trying to, a lot of times, just survive the test that we're facing. Well, let's look at fear, just like reasoning, from a different perspective. We go back to Genesis 22 and verse 12, and this takes us there to the mountain, okay? Where Abraham is about to take the life of his son on the altar. And look at what the angel says. The angel comes to Abraham and he says, "Stop, do not lay a hand on the boy. Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you," look at this, "that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Now I know that you do not fear God." We need to get a proper understanding of what that word means, okay? This is not fear in the sense of trembling in our boots. And no, this is not another picture of little Cameron, okay? All right? This is not a trembling in our boots, shaking, you know, just terrified of God. That's not what this word is all about. The Hebrew word for fear that is used here, and I'm not a Hebrew scholar, so forgive me, okay? But I think it is pronounced yare. And that word is used of a person in an exalted position. In other words, it's the idea of standing in awe of someone. Okay? It is reverence. Okay? Just like standing in awe of God before His throne. You see? It is not this simple kind of a fear, but it's reverence whereby an individual recognizes the power and possession of the individual that is revered and renders him proper respect. In this sense, the word may imply submission. Okay? Submission or obedience through a proper ethical relationship to God. And isn't that what Abraham was all about? Okay? Abraham obeyed God. See? And that obedience and that reverence, that fear of God, goes all the way back to the first time that Abraham got a phone call from God. Remember when he was in the Ur of the Chaldees? Not a technical phone call, okay? But you understand what I mean. God called Abraham and said, "Get thee up from thy home country and go and take your family to a place that I will show you." And what we don't see Abraham doing is saying, "Okay, well, wait a minute, God, where is this place that you're taking me to? Never heard of it. Well, could you show me on a map where it is?" No. What did Abraham do? How did he respond? In obedience. He submitted to God. And he packed up his family and he went and followed God to a place he had no idea where he was going. Okay, why did he do that? Because of his faith. Okay? Because of his faith. You see, God does not want us to be afraid of Him. But when He uses this word fear in that way, that's not what it means. God does not want us to be trembling in fear and paralyzed in fear of Him. You see? What He wants us to do is to have a deep reverential trust of Him. Okay? So that we will do what He tells us to do. Again, when we keep in mind and understand that everything God has going on in our life, everything thus that He tells us to do is for what? Our own good, our best interest. You see, then it's easier to just simply obey. I don't know what the outcome is going to be. I don't have to know, because I know that God has my best interest in mind. And so I'm just going to obey. Okay? That trust causes us to obey Him. We can't do otherwise. Even when we're tempted to run the other way. And I mean, let's be honest. How many times have you been in some kind of a test and that's what you want to do? I want to run as far away from this as I possibly can. I don't want to have to deal with this. But obedience will help us to stay the course. Okay? Even when we're going up the mountain to do what has got to be one of the hardest tests that anybody could face. That trust then will help us to grow and to mature. Right? As we continue on facing a lot of the tests that we're going to face in this life as Christians. Life as a Christian is a journey. It's not an event. And along that journey, there's going to be a lot of curves and a lot of testing in those curves. What we need to do is to focus on, again, God has our best interest in mind, so I need to trust Him. Okay? That will allow me to obey Him. You see, here's what it's all about. I like this right here. I found this at God sometimes takes us into troubled waters, and that's how we describe sometimes the testing that we go through, isn't it? Troubled waters. But He doesn't do it to drown us. He does it to cleanse us. Okay? I don't know what the testing is that you may be going through in your life right now. But again, I'm here to tell you this morning, whatever it is, it is for your best interest. Make you stronger having gone through it. If you don't become stronger having gone through whatever it is you're facing, then that trial and that test that you're going through will have been wasted on you. And that's what Satan wants. Okay? So this morning, I'm here to encourage you that whatever it is that you are facing, whatever test you're going through in your life, if you're going through one right now, or whatever you're going to go through around the next curve in your life, perhaps, that you will know that God will take you through it. And He's taking you through it to make you stronger. As long as you don't give up. Now, one of the ways that God takes us through those things and helps to make us stronger is when we lean on one another. That's why He gave us one another, you see. And so maybe whatever you might be going through in your life right now, maybe you need some help or some guidance or encouragement or teaching or anything. That's what we want to provide for you. Maybe it's forgiveness. I don't know. But let God speak to you and help you to see what you need. And if there's something we as a church family can do to help you through that, then let us know. I'll be up here in the front to receive anyone. Dale will be in the back. If you'd like to have a private conversation or prayer with him, he'll be back there to meet with you. The invitation is open to you. And if there's someone here this morning that's not yet a Christian, if you haven't given your life to Christ but you're ready to do that, you can do that right now this morning. The invitation is open to you. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God and you're ready to make Him Lord of your life, then you can do that right now. Confess Him as Lord. Repent of the sin that's separating you from God and have those sins washed away in the waters of baptism. You can have that happen right now. You don't have to wait. All you got to do is come up and let me know. We're here to serve you. The tests are there. But God does not expect you to meet those tests alone. And by the way, one last note, the tests are all open book. If you will open the book and use it. Okay? Let's stand together and sing.